Do you want us to keep producing the best VCU men's basketball podcast out there? If so, there's a way you can help. If you enjoy this show, please consider donating to help us pay for the cost of making it available. You can do so by using the PayPal link in the description of the podcast or on social media sites where we post it. Even a small donation would help. Thanks in advance, and go Rams! Welcome to Rams Rewind, a podcast that looks back at all of the action from VCU men's basketball. After each game, our host George Templeton talks live on Facebook with Ram fans and gives his take on the team's performance. And now, here's George.
Well, this game was a roller coaster. At times, VCU was brilliant. At times, VCU was ludicrous. And you had on one end of the floor, you had brilliance. The other end of the floor, you had ludicrousness. They had some of the dumbest basketball imaginable. But at the end of the game, when they had to play brilliantly, they played brilliantly. They made great plays. And they're on to Sunday. Yes, if it's Sunday and it's Brooklyn, New York, it's VCU basketball. Welcome to Rams Rewind, live here in the Good and the Bad and the Ugly group. If you like what you hear, and I hope you do, and you want to help us out, you can shoot us some dinero. There is a link to the PayPal in the description on Podbean and your other podcast platforms. Oh, my God. Did they put us through it today? But they got it done. Yes, one win from the dance, Dan Gaetanis. But not without some moments that just made you want to pull your hair out. I don't think I've ever seen a team play as brilliantly on the defensive end as VCU played in the first 16 minutes of the game, while at the same time playing about as idiotically on the offensive end as they could. Because Bruce Stevenson will spend plenty of time on that. We got to get through this game first. Because VCU's team defense in the first 16 minutes was so outstanding. It was some of the best they've played this year. They were energetic. They were all over Eric Reynolds. They were giving him nothing. They were making St. Joe's work so hard, and they were giving St. Joe's absolutely zip. And quite literally, in the first 16 minutes, it was only second chance opportunities and one transition opportunity, and they had nothing other than that. Yet at the same time, they looked like five individuals on the offensive end of the floor playing some of the most ridiculous basketball, not passing, not even thinking about passing, jacking up terrible shots. God, I don't even understand how it's possible that a team can play that well on one end of the floor and then play that silly on the other end. But it happened. That is what happened. So you get down at the end of the half because they quite frankly lost their marbles out there, jerking up these threes, none of which were going in. They were 0 for 10 at the half. And St. Joe's took advantage of it, and I wondered if we were going to pay the piper for it. And then the funny thing is, we had the same start to the second half that we had at the Siegel Center. Bairstow scores 5 points right out of the gate, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, we really are going to relive the second half all over again. But then, again, we had the issues with, you know, questionable decisions and questionable shots to being taken. Let's see here. Fermin had a tough night, Chris MJ. I can't deny it. He's got to be stronger with the basketball. He made some bad decisions. I'll give Fermin this. He set some really good screens out there that featured prominently in some critical moments. The wall, as somebody who said it about the wall, I want to praise you because you're absolutely right. Somebody said, how about the wall playing with three fouls the whole half? Yes, the wall, three fouls. I thought he was tremendous in the second half. I'm trying to see who said that, and I can't see it because it keeps doing something, and I can't look. But LaWall was – oops, sorry about that. LaWall was tremendous in the second half. You know, he plays with three fouls. He avoids the foul. He avoids getting another foul. He sets up great screens too. Him and Fermin both set some big screens in the second half. And I'll tell you that there were just so many different things. Before we get to Max Scholga, and I know it's funny because it's like I've talked this long, I haven't mentioned Max Scholga yet, and Max Scholga had an incredible game tonight. I mean, he could almost do no wrong. It was unbelievable. But Joe Bamisil, who had no field goals for pretty much the entire game, and thankfully didn't force a lot. You only saw him take 1-3. Yeah, it was Bill Baldacci. He was absolutely right about that. But he doesn't force shots. He only got caught around a screen one time. But those two baskets were such brilliant plays by him. He uses the screen. He gets to the defender's hip. The defender's chasing. He stops, lets the defender go right on by, shoots that little jumper. That's what a three-level scorer does. They can score outside, mid-range, at the basket. And then, yes, the dunk, Chris MJ. He uses the screen. He's got the lane at the baseline, but he did the little hesitation just for a moment so that almost another screen could be set right out of the paint area. He gets the big dunk. Great job. Yeah, LaWall had a great game minus the foul trouble. And LaWall should have had about two or three and ones because seriously, if Asondico puts your body on you, it's pretty hard for that not to be a foul when somebody's shooting. And I mean, you know, I mean, because that's 280 pounds of just thump. And how LaWall didn't get a couple and ones is beyond me. But you know what? We are mad about the officiating. The officiating effectively screwed St. Joe's out of this game. Because once they missed the layup and there's 19 seconds left and you've got to foul six times to get the other team in the bonus, VCU runs the entire clock, runs off what? Half the clock? Actually, it wasn't 19 seconds. What am I talking about? It was 29 seconds. VCU runs half the clock off while they're waiting to foul. Then Nelson bricks the freaking free throw. God, poor Jason Nelson. He's just, I'm sorry. He can't see the floor right now the way he's playing. I don't know what's going to take to get him out of the funk that he's in. He bricks it, but Scholga makes a great effort and tips it off Brown and gets it back. And then he gets the ball after some hairy moments. You know, if you throw it into the backcourt, it's got to be more wide open than that. Zeb makes a great play to catch that ball. And then, you know, they get fouled, and then they get it to Scholga on a 50-50 call. And trust me, that was a 50-50 call. If they'd have called an offensive foul on Scholga, we all would have been mad. It probably would have been right. Unfortunately, that would have been a disaster. So that was lucky for VCU. But Scholga gets the two free throws and seals it up. But it just – the fact that they didn't call any fouls on St. Joe's killed us until it killed them. And Everett, I just wonder if you're – you might be right. You know, he has not played a good game since the Robin Center people booed his rear end out of the building. And I just – I don't understand it. I'm surprised. But everybody has shooting slumps. I don't know what – I mean, he needs to see the ball go in the basket, which is why I was – when he got to the foul line, I'm like, oh, God, if he can make these free throws, that might be the thing that just saves him. And it's a damn brick, and you just can't believe it. But what a second half offensively. And it's led by Max, who was just peerless. Max did not miss a shot in the second half. And quite frankly, you know, Bairstow makes 1-3. Everybody else misses theirs. I said it during the game. I said, it was one of the timeouts. I said, unless it's Max Scholga, I don't want to see any blankety blank taking another three. Well, Max Scholga, 3-for-3 in the second half. From the three-point line, 7-for-7 overall, makes both the foul shots. Oh, he has an assist as well, 19 points. They couldn't stop him. And you know what? Not that it was controversial that he ended up on the first team, but you think about yesterday, zero field goals and they win, and today he saves it. The game time tomorrow, Bradley Heath, is I'm almost sure is 1 o'clock. I'm almost sure it's 1 p.m. I can actually look for you right now because I can get the guide up here. But I'm almost sure it's big CBS, 1 o'clock, because usually that's what happens. Usually it's the, yeah, A10, 1 o'clock, big CBS. Oh, yes. Gonna get all my grocery shopping done after church and get on home for that. Chris MJ, it's a good comment about Zeb, but here's what I will say. Zeb had that all game. And why he took 5 3-pointers, I know he'd been warming up from three, but Zeb took some terrible shots in that first half, and I wanted to strangle him. I was so hot. But he is a great floor general, and again, he's so quick. If Zeb gets to the defender's hip, he's gone. It's over. And Zeb had some great drives in that second half. And I was just so – I was jumping up and down every time this team drove because that was the key. When this team drive, they drove, they consistently got by these guys because Reynolds, Cam Brown, X Brown, Lynn Greer, they're very good players, and I'm not saying they're not, but they ain't the best defenders. And there was just never any reason. They were giving VCU the three-pointer because VCU wasn't making them except for Max Shulga. And when you look at the game total, it just shows Shulga was 3 for 4. The rest of the team was 1. That is right, 1 for 16. So look, you know, understand that. And early in the game, one of the reasons St. Joe's was keeping up with us early in the game when we were playing well is that at least in the first 2 or 3 minutes, we're running them off the 3-point line. So they're like, okay, we're going to drive inside and get layups. And then they went ice cold and we didn't take advantage of it. And that was the killer for us. Excuse me. Goodness gracious. But what a tremendous effort in the second half. 18 of 29 from the field. That's 62%. They were 14 of 19 from 2. I mean, honest to goodness. That is just fantastic. And again, a lot of it was individual. They only had 4 assists on 18 made baskets in the second half. And that's not the way VCU wants to play, honestly. But it was a lot of great individual effort. Shulga, Jackson, Bairstow. But again, there wasn't the assists like we like, but you know what there was? There were screens. There were good screens. And all they needed to do was give the VCU ball handler a chance to get to the hip of the defender, and then it was done. And that's what Furman and LaWall, Kawani too, a few others, they were all setting good screens, gave Bamisil, gave Zeb, gave Bairstow, gave Shulga a chance to get to the hip of the defender, and away they went. So they survived, even though Eric Reynolds has 18 points. He didn't go nuclear because, again, one of the reasons I think Eric Reynolds is one of the best players in this league, he ain't just going to jack it up. He ain't going to force a contested shot. If he doesn't have it, he's not going to take it. So you're not going to see Eric Reynolds go 7 for 25 that often because he's a smarter player than that. But that was the key. But that's the thing. Furman didn't have a good game, but he set some good screens. You know, LaWall set some great screens. Oh, gosh, what else? Oh, VCU loses the rebounding battle but wins second chance points 12-7. In a game like this, huge, huge, huge. Oh, my gosh. What else? What else do we want to say? Michael Bell. Michael Bell had some good moments. He had some good moments out there. I was pleased with Michael Bell. Played some good defense. Mitch, you can sit there and say that about the good screens. It's important because here's the other problem. VCU, I swear, gets called for more moving screens than anybody, but you didn't see that in the second half. What you saw was good, solid screening, and it made a big difference. So I do want to point that out. Some great defensive plays. Look at the end of the game, and this is what we talk about all the time, but it's the truth. Sometimes you just have to be there. You can't make the block. You're not Toby LaWall. You're not Christian Furman. You're not Kawani. Sometimes you have to be there. They throw the ball in It's a great design play by Billy Lane. It's a layup. All Shulgin is there. He jumps. He provides a body in the way, and the guy misses it. It's not going to happen every time, but just sometimes you just have to be a body that's there. And Shulgin does that. VCU gets the rebound, and it sets the whole thing in motion. You know, they do a great job on the drive right at the end of the game in the last 10 seconds, and there's Joe Bamifsil sneaking around the corner and getting the steal and dribbling it out. Great. Great from Joe on that. Tremendous. Oh, there's no question, Matt Ball. This is a much better defensive team with Michael Bell on the floor. That is every metric backs it up. Everything you see with your eyes, everything that's going on this season shows that. So it's great to see Bell getting minutes. I want him to get more. I want him to get more because of that reason, especially when our guards – and here's the other thing. I'll give – you know, there's all the talk. You know, people are taking shots at the people that don't like Ryan Odom. That first half was kind of like why I don't like Ryan Odom at times, because the team keeps making these mistakes on the floor that you're just like, what the F? But Ryan Odom, key point for the game. Zeb has just jerked up another terrible three that was nowhere near going in. He sits him down. He sits him down for a couple minutes. And that is something that I've always been talking about, is that sometimes you got to sit people and just let them reset, talk to them, maybe yell at them a little bit. Bradley Heath. I may sound angry today, but I'm not, at least not all the time. But, you know, that couple minutes, Zeb sat, was absolutely necessary. And then he called the timeout right before the under eight, and I saw some complaining about that in the thread. But that was the right thing to do because that lineup was struggling. And let's get our best players back on the floor. But after that timeout, Zeb played great. He played the right way defensively. He played the right way offensively. And I would continue to tell Zeb, I don't want you taking a lot of threes, because the defender breathes a sigh of relief unless it goes in, because none of these defenders can stay in front of him just about. He is so quick, and his dribble is so tight. Like, we see Bamifsil when he dribbles too much, it's trouble. Not when you don't see Zeb Jackson, you know, dribble it off his foot or get the ball poked away a lot, because his dribble is so tight and he's so good with it. And how about this too? I didn't even see this. Zeb, 8 rebounds. Only Fleming, only big old 7'3" Fleming had more rebounds than Zeb Jackson today. How about that? Absolutely marvelous. Whew. So, VCU is in the final again. If it's Sunday and it's Brooklyn, New York, and it's the Atlantic 10, it's VCU basketball. We can't get to the final hardly anywhere else in this rotation of arenas we've got. But, man, in Brooklyn, we're tough. We are tougher than a $2 steak, boy. I'll tell you what. By the way, VCU made their last 6 shots. So what a second half shooting the ball. 62% again, I said it before. Gets them over 50% for the game. Whew. All right. So now I'm going to answer the question that Bruce Stevenson and others are asking about tomorrow. The excellent Chris Conway. Get them celebratory drinks down your gullet. You deserve them. Everybody deserves them. What a win. So tomorrow, I got to find what my producer said on Twitter, because it's so funny and it's so true. Because people were saying after Dayton lost, oh, well, VCU, they've got this. And I'm like, hold the phone, kids. Not when the other side of the bracket has 0-3, has two teams that VCU's 0-3 against combined. So Duquesne or freaking doggone St. Rasputin Bonaventure? That's the question. Let me find what my producer said, because it's the absolute God's gospel what he said on Twitter, because we were talking about this on there. And it's like, you know, it's a terrible choice. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. It's a choice between death by gunshot or death by an arrow to the head. That's my producer saying that about the choice between Duquesne and St. Bonaventure. And he's absolutely right. It isn't going to be a picnic in the park either way. I'm sick of St. Bonaventure because their rear end should have been out on dead gum flipping. Which day was the second day of the tournament? Thursday? No, Wednesday. Their behinds should have been out of here. LaSalle should have won that game. The refs absolutely jobbed the Explorers. It was a joke. It was robbery. And part of me, yes, I'll admit, part of me is saying that because I picked LaSalle to upset St. Bonaventure in the A-10 talk bracket competition. But seriously, the offensive foul they called on Brickus was the biggest flop of all time. And that referee that called that should be embarrassed that he fell for that con job. So they should have been out. The refs totally, absolutely screwed LaSalle. They should have been out. And then against Loyola Chicago, that game was done. It was 58-47 with freaking 5:23 to go. St. Bonaventure was going nowhere, and then somehow they come back and win in overtime because all of a sudden Loyola Chicago can't score for 8 minutes. It was – watching that was watching a car crash in slow motion, and I couldn't even – I could barely muster any words after it. It was so silly. So I'm tired of St. Bonaventure. So based on just that alone, I'd rather play Duquesne. The problem is Duquesne has Trey Clark. And Trey Clark, maybe it's less now because Mike Rhodes isn't there. But Trey Clark is trouble for us. And he's a dog. And we couldn't stop Day-Day Grant. Day-Day Grant destroyed us down at the Siegel Center. He got around the screens. We didn't get around the screens, and he busted our tail. So it's not a great choice. I'm sick and tired of St. Rasputin Bonaventure, but I ain't looking forward to playing Duquesne either. Because let me tell you, it's so funny. Everybody made fun of Keith Danbrot for that quote when he said it's got to be like mud wrestling. That's exactly what it is. When you're playing them, you'd better get the steel-toed boots out and get the chain mail because it's gonna be a war down there. So, and I'll be honest, I don't know if we're ready for that kind of physicality because at times we did all right with Esondico today, and at times we just couldn't handle them. And that's the thing. What I can't answer for tomorrow, whether we play either St. Bonaventure or Duquesne, is are we going to be tough enough? And how about that? Wisconsin just beat Purdue. Wow. Are we going to be tough enough when it counts? Because that, for me, is all this comes down to. If you're going to beat Duquesne or St. Bonaventure, you have got to be the tougher team. Because that didn't happen. That certainly didn't happen in the first game at the Siegel Center against the Bonnies. And it didn't happen in the second half up in Olean, New York. And look, both of those teams are going to have confidence against us, even if it's been a while since in Duquesne's case, they haven't been in A-10 final since God only knows when. But they're going to be confident if they see us. That's just the truth. St. Bonaventure is going to be confident because why wouldn't they be? So, again, for me, it's going to come down to VCU's toughness, but it's also going to come down to this. Are we going to play with IQ and intelligence on the floor? Because if we had lost this game, I would be going on and on and on about the just brain-dead basketball at times that we played. But we won this game because in the last 5 minutes of the game, we played brilliantly. We played it smart on the defensive end, by and large. But we had brilliant plays made by our players making smart decisions everywhere you looked on offense in that last 5 minutes, which is why they won the game. So there's the question I can't answer. Are we going to be tough enough and are we going to be smart enough? Because that's what it's going to take. Because neither of those teams, whoever it is we play, they're not only not going to be intimidated, they're going to be confident. They are going to be confident. They are happy that they're not playing St. Joseph's. And I know that sounds crazy to anybody that's going to listen to this podcast, but it's the truth. I guarantee you St. Bonaventure and Duquesne are thrilled not to have to deal with Eric Reynolds, because Eric Reynolds is so good, and both of those teams at times can struggle with perimeter defense, that Eric Reynolds could have shot them right out of the right, could have shot either one of those teams out of the building tomorrow. They are thrilled to be playing VCU. And VCU's got to understand that, and they've got to say, you know what? Okay, that's how you feel. We're going to show you. Because they ought to feel insulted that anybody would say that they'd rather play VCU than somebody else in the A-10, but it's the truth. It's the truth. And I hope that that's the – they should think – I hope the way they come out tomorrow is thinking of that. You think you got the Indian sign on us, we're going to show you. You think you got the wood on us, we're going to show you. That's how they've got – that is how they've got to approach this. They, not necessarily that we're the underdog or this or that or the high seed or any of that nonsense. No. You've been beaten by these teams. You've lost however many in a row to God darn St. Bonaventure that you've lost. And Duquesne beat you this year after punking you in Pittsburgh. It's time to pay it back. And that's got to be the attitude. We got to pay it back, but we got to pay it back by being the tougher team and the smarter team. And yes, John O'Neill, free throws. Of course, today we didn't have any free throws because most of this game, they just said, to heck with calling fouls. We're just going to let everybody do whatever. I mean, we end up – VCU ends up with eight – after shooting, what was it? They shot 69 free throws in the first two games. They shoot a grand total of eight today. Granted, St. Joe's shot a grand total of seven. So there you go. I mean, it was an interestingly officiated game. It was a bizarrely officiated game at times. But I suppose if you want to say anything, it was consistent. Oh, one other thing. Again, not the best defensive team in the world. VCU only had two turnovers in the second half. Two turnovers. Eight for the game. So you see how good an offensive team they can be when they hold on to it. You know, that is – they were so efficient in the second half. And again, tempo, tempo, tempo. When this game got sped up, they were in trouble. Yes, I'm almost done, Steve. But that's the key, tempo, tempo, tempo. When VCU gets sped up, it's a problem. When they play a game in the half court, and honestly – it may come down to that tomorrow, too. If they don't allow the transition offense, if they don't allow Duquesne or St. Bonaventure to beat them down the floor and get set up, then they're going to be okay because their half-court defense is awesome. Well, Chris MJ, let's remember, they didn't call one on Shulga, and they shouldn't have because he didn't get the body. He made a great play and tipped it off Cam Brown's hands. That's the other thing. Somebody, one of my friends texted me, it's true. These dadgum announcers, they must have been cheering for St. Joe's because they're like, oh, that could have been a such and such against VCU, and that could have been a such and such against VCU. Well, excuse me, is Asondico not putting his big body on doggone the wall and nothing's being called, you jerk? Seriously, these officials were going on and on about that stuff. That's interesting, John O'Neill, because Doug Hines was saying that if he got his 1,000th point, that we would win. How many points? I didn't even know he was close to 1,000. How many points did he need to get to 1,000? Because I had no idea, honestly, until I saw Doug Hines mentioned in the game thread. Which, again, if you're not part of the VCU Good and the Bad and the Ugly group, you should be. Game threads are fire. You know, well, I make, you know what, John O'Neill, that makes sense. I should have known better. I should have just listened to Robbie and Rodney. I may go and listen to their call of the game later anyway, just to make myself happy. But yeah, I had no idea until Doug Hines mentioned in the game thread that it was that Sean Bairstow was near 1,000. But yeah, if it must have been 12 points, because if he got his 1,000th, he got 13 points today. Matt Ball, they call goaltending, so because that's a good point. But the problem was they called goaltending, and even though there were games down in Orlando where they didn't review it later and look at it, When they call goaltending, they can review it at the next stoppage. They reviewed it and said, it's not a goaltend. They took the points off the board. That was in the first half. Because, of course, those 2 points, if we'd have had them, could have made the last 2 minutes a lot less stressful. But whatever. Whatever. Doesn't matter because we won and we're in the championship game in Brooklyn yet again. We may not always win the championship game, but we damn sure own Brooklyn. I don't care what nobody says. If it's Sunday and it's the A-10 championship in Brooklyn, it's VCU. Okay, so yes, as I said before, you should join the Good Men, the Ugly group for lots of reasons. The game threads mainly because they're fire. Tomorrow, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. Well, Matt Ball, you got to understand, though, by calling the goaltend, the other team gets the ball anyway. So instead of the live ball, they call the goaltend, and then they can look at it later and just take the points off the board without affecting anything. So that's the deal there. That's the deal there. What screwball is what they did the other game, I guess, to whoever it was to VCU, where they called a goaltend, and because it was wrong and they reviewed it right then and there, they gave the ball back to the other team, even though VCU had a clear recovery. That was bad. So, okay, I'm sorry. Let me get to this last bit here. So here's tomorrow. Here's what we're going to do. Games at 1 o'clock. There will be a live video either way. If VCU wins, it will be old school, pre-podcast. That means there will be all sorts of nonsense going on. There will be party music. There will be all sorts of carrying on by me. There will probably be drinking on the air. I can't deny that that might happen. Not a tequila shot, but, you know, whatever. We will be celebrating like absolute crazy people in here. That's what will be happening. Then, when VCU gets picked in the bracket, that's when the podcast will be recorded. We will look at the game soberly. After celebrating and calming down, we will look at the game soberly. We will talk about where we got picked in the bracket and hope that we get a good bracket pick, and we'll talk a little bit about the matchup. If VCU – actually, let me rephrase that. Whether VCU wins or loses, there will be a pod during the week next week with a certain Times Dispatch staffer if he has his stuff together. And we'll either be recapping VCU's fantastic tournament run and looking at the first round of the NCAA tournament coming up, or we'll be recapping VCU's season, or we'll be recapping VCU's tournament run and looking at whatever tournament, NIT, whatever it is they're going into. That's the plan. So tomorrow, whether they win or lose, live video. If they win, it will not be part of the podcast except for some of the comments, because we will be celebrating like crazy people, and then we'll have a podcast later after the bracket is picked. If they lose, it'll be the usual. We'll have the pod, the video and the comments in it will be part of the pod live, and all that sort of thing. But let's not think about that possibility. Let's think about the possibility of a VCU win and us celebrating like absolute imbeciles in here tomorrow in what it will hopefully be almost 24 hours from now. That's what we want to be thinking about. That's what we want to have happen. And we're just gonna think positive here, because VCU has found their way through. They have overcome so much. They have overcome themselves at times. And here we are, after everything that's happened, after everything last year, new coach, new roster, and yet here we are on the final, in the final Atlantic 10 game. Conference game that's going to be played this season, the A-10 final, and we're back there again. So kudos to everybody on that roster and to Ryan Odom and his coaching staff for making that happen. Let's kick back, relax, enjoy this second semifinal, because look, either way, it's going to be hell for leather whoever we play. So thank you all for listening. Thank you for your comments in the video. I appreciate it so much, as always. And Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, we'll be talking to you tomorrow, hopefully after an A-10 championship for Virginia Commonwealth University. Thanks so much. Talk to y'all later.
To submit a question for George to answer in an upcoming episode, or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities for this podcast, please email ramsrewind@gmail.com. We'll be back after the next game, and thanks for listening to this episode of Rams Rewind.